This is interview number CB/021BH with Captain Benyard at his precinct office on September 9th, 1992.
Okay.
First, when were you born, Captain Benyard?
Well, I was born in June 14th, 1934.
And where was that?
This is in the Collar Brownville area at 1607 Burris Street, which was located right at the corner of Grapevine Avenue and Burris.
So were you born at home?
Yes and no.
Were your parents also from that neighborhood?
My mother is from that area. My father is from South Carolina. And I am the second of four.
Okay.
I have three sisters and myself. I'm the only boy.
And did you remain in there for much of your childhood?
I remained in that area for the most of my childhood. Actually, I moved out of the area through my early adulthood, actually when I went into the service. And
what age was that?
18.
Okay.
And from the service, I then ventured. My parents had moved when I returned from the service. So actually, my young adulthood was in another area.
You were there until age 18.
So actually, I roamed the alleys, the streets, the lane, and what have you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've been asking everyone some questions about boundaries and names of neighborhoods because I found some debate and discrepancy about where Brownsville, the boundaries of that neighborhood, the origin of the name Kyler, and so forth.
Well, the origin of the name Kyler, I think, came as a result of the Kyler School. At one time, Kyler School was not always an elementary, always a high school at one time. And I was talking with someone just yesterday who actually informed me that they walked from the Ken Park area to Kyler School. And they went to school for 12 years at Kyler because there was no elementary school. At that point, Kyler was an elementary and a high school.
Mm-hmm.
So once a person actually completed school, they did all of their preschooling or elementary, junior high, and high school at Kyler, at Kyler, the building Kyler School. So basically, and then later, because long before my time, but Florence Elementary was good.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, Florence Elementary was where I went to school, at Florence Street School, which is no longer in existence. The building is, but not the school itself. And from there, when we graduated or finished Florence Elementary School, we went to Kyler in seventh grade. Florence Street School went from 1 through 6 in the 7th grade, then we went to Kyler.
Junior high.
We went from Kyler from the 7th grade to 9th. And from the 9th grade, then we went to Beach High School, which had been constructed for only 1 year when I got there. So I was one of the second class to actually go to Beach High School.
Yes. And you mentioned the address you were born at was Burroughs and
Grapevine Avenue. Right. This is the street between 33rd and 32nd. This is a lane.
These are the maps I was given by the Neighborhood Services Association for these two neighborhoods. But when you were coming up, Captain Benyard, and say you were over somewhere else in town and someone said, well, what part of town are you from? How would you answer that question?
Okay, We've been asked it more or less from the collar neighborhood. More or less from the collar neighborhood, yeah. Well, we would actually refer to it over in the collar school, collar street school neighborhood. And that's the way we would refer to it.
Because some other people notably older than yourself, have said, well, this name, Kyler, for the neighborhood is only recent. It's only since the community association started in the late 70s, and we kind of called it.
Well, it was a little before that.
But you remember.
Yeah, it was Kyler Street School area.
Neighborhood, okay. Other people have said it was Currytown. Other people said, no, Currytown was north of there.
It is. Currytown is actually, actually started around Henry and went north. Mm-hmm. Currytown. There were several names of little communities or areas. There was also an area there that a lot of people probably don't realize that was called Red Row.
Now, this is new.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Located? Okay, now Red Row was located between 34th and 35th. And the reason it was called Red Row, because there was a row of houses, and all of the houses were painted red. And everybody would refer to it as Red Row area.
And that was between 31st and 35th?
Yes, in the general area, but actually the cemetery starts on southbound. The cemetery, there was a street that run alongside the cemetery. If you would go west on 34th Street from Burris, then you would actually cross Ogeechee Road. Mm-hmm. And that particular street itself was called Red Road.
Okay.
They had a Jenkins Court over there. They had a Bismarck Court over there. Some names that, unless you were originally, I guess, from the area or came up in the area during that particular time, would you be familiar with these streets? But this is the type of thing that exists. And I ride sometimes now through the area. Some of the houses are no longer exist, but nevertheless, when you ride through the area, it kind of brings back memory, you know, as to what happened and how things were in the past.
So, what would you say the boundaries of the Kyler Street School neighborhood were?
Well, I would like to refer to it as Henry South, okay, and Henry North is Currytown. Okay, so Henry was really kind of like the dividing line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about Brownsville? Were you aware of a Brownsville name?
Now, I heard this name later, but during my childhood days, I was not familiar with that.
Okay. That Brownsville. When did you start hearing about
the Brownsville area? Actually, through my early adulthood was when I heard about the Brownsville area. Because all before, I thought we were calling it, you know, the Kyler Street school neighborhood. You know?
And what would be the southern boundary then of that Kyler Street school neighborhood in your mind when you were coming up?
Well, we would actually, I guess, consider it maybe down to maybe Victory Drive.
Yeah, so incorporating what they call Brownsville.
Yeah,
today.
Yeah. And from Victory Drive south, we would call it Ken Park, you know, maybe, and we would associate that with the park itself, you know, which is located 45th Street. I think it runs from 45th to 46th, from Stevens to Bullock Street, that area.
Did you stay at the same address, Burroughs and
Brookline? No, we moved from there during my childhood days to 34th and Burroughs, which was about just two blocks.
Okay.
Our family grew and we got a larger house. Okay. As a result of it.
Okay.
but we were still in the same area. And actually, we could stay in our house and see the old house, really.
How about some of your neighbors in that general neighborhood? What they were like, what they did for a living? Can you remember any specific neighbors?
Yeah, well, you see, I guess, in a sense, I was really kind of fortunate because my parents had a store, a confectionery in that area, and I used to work in the store. Actually, my family ran the store, so we really came in contact with most of the people in that area, and a lot of them were hard-working laborers. There were very, very few really professional, I guess, people that was living in the area at the time. However, there was a lot of discipline. There was a lot of discipline in that area because any of the adults would beat you. So if I did something and I got a whipping from one of the neighbors, I would pray that they didn't tell my parents, because if they told my parents, that was a second whipping that I got for the same thing, same incident. So I would just take whatever they put on me and kept my mouth closed. But I didn't do it again, okay? And that's the way it was with most of the kids that came up in that neighborhood. I also recall that at night, whenever the street lights came on, the street lights would come on like 6 o'clock, when, you know, just dusk. And we had to be within hollering distance of home. If our parents would call out, and during this time, everybody, there were so many juniors there, they would name everybody, all of the juniors, after their mother. There were Bessie Jr., his mother's name was Bessie. There was Francis Jr., his mother's name was Francis. There was Laura Jr., his mother's name was
Laura.
Yeah, all the boys.
As a nickname? That's
right. As a nickname, they would call all of the juniors after their mother. So we knew exactly which one of the juniors that they were talking about. But when those mothers would holler, Bessie Jr. had better be where he could hear his mama and she could hear him. Otherwise, he had something coming for him when he got home.
And this was right up into teenage
years? Oh, this was right in, yeah, it was right into the teenage years. So it was very, very strict discipline back in those days, and we had very, very little crime that occurred in those areas. And I recall very vividly whenever we saw a police car at night, we would always call, you know how a group of boys would be out in the street, playing in the street or what have you, and we would always see the police car, and we would always refer to it as bright light. Because the police car, it appears as if the lights were brighter on the police car as it was on any other vehicle. Mm-hmm. So we kind of halfway knew the police cars too, mm-hmm. you know, because of the light. And we respected the police to the utmost. Oh boy, when the police came in our neighborhood, we, you know, everybody got kind of shook up. Mm-hmm. Because we sort of policed ourselves, really. Our parents really kept us uptight, and they kept us doing the things that we were supposed to do. And there wasn't too many of us that really went bad. There's some that's gone on now, but most of the people that came up in that area have gone on and have somewhat made something of themselves. Because mm-hmm. I never thought that I would be in a position to say that here I am, the captain of police, you know, and that controls this area. I never really thought that this would ever exist, because during this particular time, we really had no black policemen. So I never thought that, you know, that I would be a policeman and would be in control of this particular area. That just is really fascinating for me. And it's kind of like history, I guess.
I mean, because your personal history reflects changes in the larger society.
That's exactly right. Right.
But you said your parents owned a confectionery store?
Yeah, we had a store.
Where was that located and what was it called?
Well,
The store was moved to three different locations. At one time, actually, it got started at on Grapevine Avenue, between Grapevine and 32nd Street. It was called Flowers Confectionery.
I've heard people mention
that. Yeah. Earlier. Okay. Those were my parents. That moved. They moved it from there to 33rd and Burris. It was also called Flowers Confectionery. Then, as the business grew, it moved then again to the 32nd and Ogeechee Road. At that point, it was called Ogeechee Confectionery. Now, my father, in this time, sell wood, ice, and we had the store. My father would actually be out on the ice truck or the wood truck, and the kids, we would have to stay and keep the store.
And
he made constant.
Mom,
well, my mom was a housewife.
Okay. Right,
but she kind of kept check on us, on all of us, really.
Okay.
My father, the children, and the store. So so we were in pretty good shape there. Then my uncle ventured out, and he built one of the first, I guess, block structures in that area, which was located down at 31st and Ogeechee Road. And this was also a Flowers Confectionery. So we sort of had maybe control of the confectionaries in that immediate area. And all of our groceries came from, there were two grocery stores in the neighborhood. One of them was called Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H, and it was located at 32nd and West Broad then, which is now MLK. And the other was called Lasky's, which was located at 31st and Burrough Street. And those were the two stores that we actually did most of our grocery shopping.
And do you remember who owned and ran those stores, like
that back then? One of the stores was operated by Raymond Hirsch.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one at 32nd and MLK, and the other was Alaska, but they were both Jewish. Both of them were Jewish people. And our fathers, our parents had accounts at those stores. Anything we wanted from in the meat line that we did not carry in our store, we had a running account at the grocery store. So we'd just go down and get those items, and my father, you know, would actually square up with them at the end of the week. So basically, this is how we did things. Now, during this particular time, you know, it was kind of like a little neighborhood type thing. Most of our clothes, you know, we didn't go to Broughton Street and all that. There were two stores there. There was a store on the corner of Park Avenue and West Broad, which is MLK now. That was called Robbins Department Store. Robbins had everything in the world that we needed for school. All of the clothing, household items were actually purchased at Robbins. If Robbins didn't have it, there was another store on MLK which was located about Charlton and West Broad, which was called Yakum and Yakum. And we didn't like to hear that name too much because the kids, you know, would always say these are Yakum pants, or this is Yakum shirt. And it was sort of a low-class store, but you have to consider that we were doing the best we had, we could with what we had. So we survived. And even with the economy as it was in today, it turned out some pretty good citizens.
I've talked to a number of people whose parents were quite poor who got onto the
professional. Yeah.
So
from the shame.
That
that's exactly right. But I sort of try to attend most of the community meetings now in that area because There are still some old-timers around, you know. And when I walk in, I'm not Captain Benyard, I'm Bobby. You know, and just have a tendency to make. And when I hear the word Bobby, I know there's somebody that knew me from my childhood days. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would always look back and we would sit up and reminisce and talk about the good old days, you know, as I can remember.
Well, can you think of any individuals from the neighborhood who really, or the schools, who really served as role models for you, who you think helped inspire you to?
Well, first of all, Mr. Law. Mr. Law would always walk. I've never known him to have a car. He would always walk through the neighborhood. And Mr. Law could call anybody, any and everybody by name. It was on first name basis. And he was carrying mail at that time. And Mr. Law just walked through the neighborhood and everybody knew Mr. Law. Mr. Law knew everybody. And I've always said that I want to be like that guy. And right now I guess I'm sort of, in a sense, kind of like him because we argue. And it's the pleasant type of arguing. You know, it appears if I've even developed some of his traits when it comes to his personality. Because I want to kind of pattern my life, you know, after him. And I find myself not going at it with him, just like he come at it with me. When we see each other, this is the way we sort of greet each other, you know. And it's a pleasant it's pleasant memories for me. Yeah.
And you basically your childhood work involved helping out at the store.
Did you oh yeah,
any
well
part time jobs. In
the no, I did not work anywhere else. We had enough to keep us busy.
Kept you busy there.
Yeah, I recall you know we and the three schools that I attended. That's Florence. Kyla and Beach. Each of the schools that I attended, you know, we walked. There was no riding, and we enjoyed it. We enjoyed walking. For instance, when a kid left Florence Street School and he went to Kyla, the boys they would initiate them, you know, for coming into junior high school. There was one classroom, Mrs. McDonald. I'll never forget it. In order to get to Mrs. McDonald's class, you had to go up the fire escapes. And the upperclassmen, the kids that were already in junior high school, get on those steps. And as you went by to go to class, they would beat you with belts. So this was one of the things that that would stick with you for the rest of your life, leaving elementary school, going into junior high school. That was really the punishment. Then we went, once we graduated from Kyla, then we went to Beach. And here was a different ball game altogether. We actually got involved then in athletics. And this somewhat made at least me a little more well-rounded. Because then I started thinking in terms of others, more so than just myself.
Team sports.
Yeah, I played football, and there was an interesting story behind that. My very first year, it was almost unheard of to make the team the very first year, because we didn't have neighborhood schools. There were only two high schools in the city of Savannah, you know. And it was almost heard of to make the team your first year. This particular year, I made the team my very first year. And the very first game was in Atlanta. The high schools, we would travel to other parts of the city because there wasn't that much competition locally. So I made the team, and now my mother didn't know I was playing football. My dad knew, and he would always cover for me. We got ready to go on the trip, so we were going to Atlanta. It was cold during the winter, and my mother would not let me take a top coat that day because my sister told her I was playing football and the team was going out of town. So I left home without a top coat. I found my dad, who was on his
ice route, and he went back home and got the coat for me. He told my mother he was going to put the coat in the cleaner. So he brought the coat to me, gave me some money, and I went on to Atlanta with the team. Now, that was fine if we came back that same day, I'd have been okay. But the Atlanta trip was always an overnighter. Okay? So now this is hearsay, but my mother constantly tells me, you know, that I was a devilish little boy. And that my father, too, was devilish. Because during the night, she came to the door and she started hollering and I didn't answer. So she told him, you know, my daddy tried to stay out as late as he could, hoping that my mother would go to sleep that she would go to sleep before he got in, you know, that way he wouldn't have to lie and wouldn't have to ask any questions about it. So as a result, he said, later on during the night, she told him to get up out of bed and that he wasn't going to sleep until he found me and brought me in the house. So he finally told him, leave him alone, he's in Atlanta with the football team.
And
so we were in hot water. He finally got out of it somehow. But the interesting part about that was, when I was in Atlanta, I played. Now, and I got hurt. I think I got a sprained ankle or something. So we came back the very next day, and I was hopping. I hopped all the way from Beach High School to about Klein Street. That's the street before we got to our house. I even had a stick walking with me. And when I got to Klein and Burris, I threw the stick away and walked without a limp. And I went in and took whatever my mother dished out to me, which was nothing other than an argument, because my father sort of softened the blow a little for me. And from that point on, everything was okay. But from that point, from high school, I went into the service, came out of the service, and went to college. And I was fortunate enough to obtain a scholarship to college, an athletic scholarship. So I went on to school, and during my second year of school, my father died. So at that point, I quit school to sort of help the family. And then sometime later, I got married, sort of went out on my own. Got a job here on the police department. Then after having been on the department about a year and a half, I saw the necessity to go back to school. In the meantime, a kid came into our lives, so we had a child. So now I was serving in the capacity of a father, a husband, a student, and a policeman. And the funny part about it, during the time that I was in school at the expense of my parents and the scholarship, I was just kind of getting by. And when I went back with the four of those labels attached to me, I started making the dean's list. And it was rather, rather interesting to know that although the burden was heavier, at that point, I was able to do well in school. And after which, things started looking up for me a little here at the police department. Started getting some recognition for the degree. And I was able to sort of move around somewhat in the police department. And I've served in just about every capacity here in the police department. And now here I am, as a captain. Now, I must admit that things sort of opened up a bit for me, and I was a bit lucky too, because I went somewhat up the ladder very rapidly after it got started. But the hardest thing for me was to make sergeant. And once I made sergeant, I competed for lieutenant, and I went from sergeant to captain in 8 months, which was pretty rapid. And I was pretty lucky, too, to have been in the right place at the right time with the right credentials. Mm-hmm. So the decision that I made to go back to school was really an asset.
Where did you graduate?
Savannah State.
Great. Yeah. And I guess at that point you knew the value of it.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Captain Daniel?
Yes.
Major English here, see you.
Okay, be right with me.
Okay.
Okay. This will wind this up. I hate to, but it looks like you've got company. Do you have any other... I mean, I have a whole list of other questions I'd like to ask.
Well, you know what? The guy that's out there now, mm-hmm. he's an ex-policeman. Major Ingham, actually, he was the first black major on the police department here.
I was going to ask you when the force was first
started. Okay, he's out there now. If you want me to, I can bring him in. So, because it's nothing confidential I'm just talking about.
Oh, sure.
Will that be okay?
It's pretty innocuous stuff. Was there any sense of rivalry or competition between these different neighborhoods that you mentioned?
The only rivalry that we really had was not between anybody on the west side or anybody on the east side. The only rivalry that we had was the west side guys against the east side guys. If one of the high school students happened to have been dating a girl that lived on the east side, he was in trouble.
With the east side guys.
And if the east side guys happened to have been dating a girl from the west side, he was in trouble. Mm-hmm. The only rivalry that we really had was between east and west.
Because you were all at the same high schools.
Yeah. There was no problem with them coming to school. Once they got out of school and went home, fine, but stay there. That's the way that really was.
But you probably played on some of the same sports.
No doubt about
and
it.
So forth,
no doubt about it. And I think.
After
that's right. And I think that was really. Athletics was really the instrument that really bridged that gap.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, they were allowed to come west. Because the schools were west, we didn't have to go east for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the athletes were actually allowed to come, and then pretty soon they stopped bringing their friends, and then it just sort of diminished. But the rivalry did occur between the guys on the east side and the guys on the west side.
Yeah, I'm
not sure
that.
Yeah. Now there were some brawls too now that occurred. But now, interestingly enough, the brawls occurred in Forsyth Park at the east-west line, right at Bull Street.
Between east and west,
yeah.
So there were some type of, I don't know, not necessarily gangs, just groups.
Well, you see, during this time, we didn't have weapons at our disposal, like knives and guns and all that. It was just fist fights or sticks or bricks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for instance, in this area I was telling you about the Red Roy area. There was a guy over there by the name of Ashcat. This was not his name. That was his nickname. And I couldn't tell you today what his real name is. But we call him Ashcat. And that guy had three sisters. And anytime anybody jumped on that boy, he came back with his sisters. He didn't have any brother. He was kind of like I was. And his sisters would wade the battle for him. You know, and we were actually afraid of his sisters. But he was the kind of guy that if you hit him and you ran from him and you turn a corner, he could pick up, and we would always talk about this even today, he would pick up a brick basket and he would spit on it, and you turn the corner and that brick basket turn the corner behind you and will hit you. Now I'm about to tell you, it will hit you. So he was famous for throwing a brick at you. But knives and guns didn't exist. You know, our parents had them, but we knew not to touch them. But anytime we got in a brawl or something, it was really just a good old-fashioned fist fight.
How about about within the neighborhood as far as who you played with and the kinds of games and recreation you had as a child?
Well, first of all,
child?
We played with everybody. Everybody that was in the neighborhood actually participated. We had several teams that existed within the neighborhood, and we had an area that we played in that was called the Green. The Green was located at the end of 33rd Street, which started at Burris. And it took in, it was a big wide open space there. And we had a baseball field there. We used to practice. And when we played our games, we actually played our games on Florence Street school ground, on the school grounds over there. And it appears kind of like the whole neighborhood would just turn out to watch those games. And the kids, the parents, the neighbors, and all would just interact.
Baseball.
And this was the coming together, I guess, of the neighborhood, because the kids, the parents, the neighbor, and like I said, anybody would beat you. So you pretty well had to kind of stay in line. You know, it was always yes ma'am, or yes sir, or no ma'am, or no sir.
So on the blocks that you lived, the two different blocks, you pretty much would know who lived in every house.
Every house,
they
yeah.
would know you.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And we would look out for each other, too. But, you know, our parents would go out, or we would leave home. We didn't lock the doors. You know, lock the doors. And everybody in the neighborhood had those wooden porches. And on Saturday morning, everybody would scrub that porch. It appears that they would try to see who could have the cleanest porch, because whether the porch was dirty or not on Saturday morning, they scrubbed it.
Now, in that neighborhood, were most people renting or homeowners?
Yeah, they were renting, homeowners. Yeah. There were very, very few homeowners.
And
very few.
That terrific pride.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. But the neighborhood was clean. It was clean. Every house in the neighborhood was occupied. Mm-hmm. People took a lot of pride. They would not just rake in front of that door, they would sweep in front of that door. And this sweeping now, the sand. The sandy soil that was out there. There was never made paper. It was well groomed as far as landscape, a little landscape. There was no grass because they didn't believe in grass. They believed in flower gardens. You know, everybody would just about have a flower garden or a plant or something on the porch. But it was a good old day.
What I'll ask is a final difficult question. And why do you think the area started changing?
Family value, I think, has somewhat deteriorated. I don't think that the younger generation really instilled the kind of family values that our parents did in us. Somehow, it sort of escaped a generation, I think. Why, I don't know. I can't tell you why this happened, but it kind of escaped a generation. And I think that what we are observing now is the result of that. You know? I wouldn't dare, even being a policeman now, attempt to spank somebody else's child. But, oh, they didn't spank me either. They whipped me, you know. And I wouldn't dare tell anybody when I got home, because there was another one coming if I told it.
And how about, I know you grew up, went into the service, went to college, and then when you came home and married, you didn't move back to that area. Is that correct?
No, because my wife was from a different area. And we'll be moved into somewhat of a neutral area. Actually, I went into a housing project, so I moved into the housing project. But it wasn't that I was ashamed of it or didn't want to go back, I would have gone back and would have had no reservations at all about it.
But most of your friends who you grew up with, have most of them have moved on out of that neighborhood?
Yeah, they, most of them, believe it or not, are homeowners. They grew up, started working, and they purchased homes elsewhere. And sort of made families and lives themselves. And some of them are, right now, are very prosperous.
And so I guess they saw move out of those rental houses into their own homes.
Into their own homes.
Progress.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Okay.
Are you still in touch with any of your childhood friends?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We get together every so often. Actually, one of the things that we really have going for us is a lot of the kids was actually in the same grade. And we still have high school class reunion once a year. Every year, during the month of December.
Every year?
Every year. And we used to have them like every 5 years, but since all of us has gotten older now, we decided that we better have it once every year, you know. And they're sort of still dropping, you know, and they're in all parts of the country. But they'll come back, and we sort of get together.
Most high schools do it every 10 years.
We were doing it every five, but then as we got older, we thought that it became necessary to then start meeting every year, because we started kind of dropping by the wayside. You know? But there's still quite a few of us that still exist. And we still have fun.
I'm going to come down after 1 minute. I have a question.
Well, now, I can't tell you what actually existed in other neighborhoods because I weren't there. If I went into another neighborhood, it was kind of like me being a visitor.
Really?
You know,
yeah, that's
right?
Out of your home.
That's right. That's right. But when I got back in on my turf, you know, I could see. But there are a lot of proud memories that come into focus each time, even as I talk now about the neighborhood that I grew up in and what that neighborhood could and did produce, even with the little resources that we had. You know, and I feel as if we sort of paid a higher price for that we got and that we obtained, but it's something that that we got into our head that no one can ever take from us. So we had a very valuable education. It also taught us how to deal with people, you know, more so than now, because a lot of the kids now, you know, they're smart, but they can only interpret or react to what they read in the book. And I like to maybe take a sentence or two out of Major Ingram's book, you know, The Law of the Jungle, and you've got to learn how to survive in it. That's what it taught me.
Well, it sounds like even though it was hard times, from what you told me, it was a pretty supportive community.
Very much so.
Knew everyone and took care of each other's kids, and I guess helped each other out in hard times.
Yeah.
Well, do you have any other comments or questions?
No. Well,
I guess I'll end for today. If I think of any other questions,
call me. You know, are we back on?
Well, if you have a few comments, if you ever use the hospital or have any.
Okay, I've never been hospitalized in my life, really.
Oh, unfortunately.
Yeah, I've never been hospitalized in my life. I've never had any type of operations or anything of that sort. However, there were
two hospitals that exist in the city of Savannah for blacks. And it was predominantly blacks at that particular time, and that was Charity Hospital, which was located in the Kyler community, and Georgia Infirmary, which is still located, but the functions, I think, are somewhat different now, at 35th and Abercorn. But all of the, well, most of the blacks in the city of Savannah actually attended, well, or went to the Charity Hospital. And they had quite a few black doctors on staff over there. However, they were some white doctors that actually attended their patients there. But most of the staff was predominantly black. The head nurse, the I assume the administrator of the hospital and all of this was black. But this is one thing that we could sort of cling to as, and I'm sure there's a lot of history behind that hospital, because a lot of the famous blacks that actually grew up or were born in Savannah was actually born in that hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure they can identify with that also. But the hospital still stands today. It is no longer used